as you have to me. And if it's just a few of your people. But we don't know that, do we?
Abramelin pointed out.
We have no idea who's behind it, nor how many are involved. If it's someone with the right sort of connections, this could spiral out of control very fast. We need one of your kind, someone who can keep his damned mouth shut, to go in and find out how they're doing this and who's behind it. We'll take it from there.
Oh, is that all? It came out drier than Mircha had intended, but the feeling in his gut wasn't sarcasm. It was dread. This was even worse than he had expected, and he hadn't expected anything good. But the Praetor was already on the search, and with pressure coming from the consul, that wasn't going to change. She had only him on it now, not understanding the seriousness of the problem. But if he didn't find out something soon... Mircha didn't want a war either. He just wanted to save his daughter. And helping Abramelin could do that and possibly stop a serious conflict, too. It was repugnant, working for people who traded his people's body parts like so many trinkets. But the trade predated him, and would continue whether there was a war to stop it or not. The last thing people give up is power. Especially power like this.
All we want from you is information, boy.
Abramelin had said, his voice taking on a wheedling tone.
There's no need for you to be in any danger yourself.
Yes, Mircha thought now, staring around at the cargo of vampires. That was working out well. And then it got worse, when a couple burly sailors stopped beside his stack of bodies, shoved the sleeping girl to the side, and picked him up. A moment later, Mircha was experiencing the pain of being dragged carelessly up the ladder and tossed onto a rain-slicked deck, along with piles of other corpses. Corpses that were too insensate to see what hell lay ahead of them. Unlike him. He'd landed facing the port, giving him a perfect view of the activity on shore. Not that he needed it. The stench would have been enough, all on its own. It was a smell he was intimately familiar with from both halves of his life. The metallic thickness of spilled blood from the battlefield, cloying and strangely sticky in the nostrils. And the unmistakable smell of burning human flesh, half roast pork and half something that made your skin ruffle and crawl and shudder, because it was wrong, it was wrong, it was wrong. He'd smelled that often enough since coming to Venice, when plague visited the town or was suspected, and the authorities ordered burnings instead of proper burials. The people had complained so much that the government had started restricting the burnings to the small island of Lazaretto, where plague victims were quarantined if found still alive. And yet, when the wind was right, you could still smell them, roasting in their own fat. People tried to pretend the stench was from the local tavern's cook fires, but they knew. They always knew. Like Mircha did, even before the clouds of smoke parted and showed him a glimpse of the carnage on shore. For a moment he froze, not only his body but his mind, too, refusing to understand what he was seeing. Piles of living corpses strewn about here and there. Other piles of dismembered yet still living body parts, because vampires didn't die just because you hacked them up. Stacks of bones, gleaming pale in the moonlight, and the massive kettles they were piled beside, where the steam was rising, 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 along with the silent screams of the damned as they were boiled alive. And then it did register. Oh, yes, it did. And the overwhelming flood of panic that came with it was wild enough to wash him off the pile, to send him scuttling like a wounded crab across the deck, to leave him with his head pushed through a railing, so desperate to get away that he forgot his shoulders wouldn't fit too. That was partly the fault of the spell, still dragging at him, and partly his own. Every time he tried to focus on a limb, it stopped working, as if remembering that it wasn't supposed to be doing that. He wouldn't get away like this. He could barely even think. And at any moment, the ship was going to dock and the sailors would be back, and after that... Mircea was a soldier. He'd faced death many times, but not like this. Not butchered like an animal, and sold like a piece of flesh in the market. He wanted to tear at his throat, to let in air he couldn't use, but suddenly, desperately needed. But he couldn't move, couldn't breathe, couldn't think. And then a voice was in his ear, familiar but bizarre in this damnable place.
Hush, be still.
Chapter 43. I resurfaced from the latest memory-related timeout, but this time it didn't go so well. Instead of popping back into my right mind, whatever that meant anymore, it felt like I'd fallen into a kaleidoscope of fractured images, as if my brain was a giant jigsaw puzzle where most of the pieces were missing, and the ones that were left weren't any good. Radu was on the floor to my right, covered in blood. The female vampire with the strange colored hair was lying on my other side, her limbs splayed out like a broken doll's. Neither was moving. They looked almost like unconscious humans. But they weren't human, and a vampire doesn't go down without catastrophic damage. Strange. They didn't appear to be hurt that badly, unlike one of the dark-haired master's servants who was lying a few yards in front of me. Or part of him was. The whole top half of his body was missing. My own body was in pain, everywhere at once, a throbbing mass of injury. But that was easily ignored. The problem with my mind was less so. My head felt heavy, confused, almost spelled. And I suddenly understood why the vampires weren't moving. Stun spells didn't usually work on their kind, since they lacked most of the bodily functions such spells targeted. But this one seemed to be different. It had also had an effect on me. I was awake, but my vampire abilities were not. A psychic scream, my own stun weapon, was impossible right now, as was trying to get inside anyone's head. But that wasn't why I lay where I had fallen while a battle raged around me. No, that was due to shock. Because we were losing. I watched the impossible through my lashes. Dozens of high-level vampires, any one of whom constituted an army all on his own, being batted aside by half as many mages. The way the spells were being flung was casual, almost as an afterthought. Yet I saw a vampire ripped in half, and another immolated while he leapt through the air in a fireball that filled half the room. What was left of him rained down as ashes.
"We have to stop meeting like this."
I blinked my eyes open to see a woman bending over me. Well, sort of. She was actually bending over the massive chandelier I seemed to be lying under, which was all I could see except for dust clouds and rubble. But I could hear.
"Don't even think about it,"
she said, suddenly sounding like a drill sergeant on a bad day. She didn't look like one. She looked like a soccer mom out on the town, in a sparkly top that went well with her short gray-brown hair and big blue eyes. She even had a drink in her hand. Crown Royal with ginger ale, judging by the smell, garnished with two maraschino cherries. I'd been about to turn around and see where all the talking, grunting, and subdued moaning was coming from, but stopped on command, mainly because my body didn't seem to be talking to me anyway. And if it had been, it would have been cursing. She belted back her drink, made a face, and tossed the glass over her shoulder.
"Okay," she told me, looking determined. "I'm going to get this thing off you, and then we'll see."
I had no idea what she was talking about. She looked to be around 50, the fluffy, comfortable sort of 50, not the runs marathons in her spare time 50, and even if she'd been the latter, she couldn't possibly lift... I hadn't even finished the thought when the huge, heavy, multifaceted chandelier was chiming its way into the air, and I was noticing the wand in her other hand.
"There," she said,
sounding satisfied and proud and faintly relieved as the massive crystal monster floated away through a mostly missing wall and across a sidewalk and into the street. The sound of a car swerving and hitting brakes at the same time drifted to us through the gap, along with some inventive cussing and... what the fuck? Can somebody get that? She asked hopefully. Somebody went to get that. She turned back to me. Okay, now isn't that better? And then she noticed the blood spurting from a couple dozen holes in my body, which I guess the dug-in crystals had been keeping inside. Well, shit. The remains of the incinerated vampire blew on the wind coming through a destroyed window. I saw the powerful one notice, the one my twin liked. He jerked his head around in disbelief while snapping the neck of the mage in his hands, and then he disappeared. For a moment, I didn't believe my eyes. One second he was there, and the next he was not, and not because he moved, but as though he had simply veiled. I took the word from my twin's mind, not going invisible then, so much as phasing to another plane of existence. It was interesting, one of the more useful vampire gifts I'd seen. But the fact remained, he'd had to use a master's power against a handful of mages in order to save his life. And it had. A trio of spells exploded where he'd just been standing, destroying a wall and setting several rooms beyond on fire. But they didn't hit him, because he was no longer there. But the mage he'd attacked was. He was lying where he'd fallen, still twitching, but his eyes were already glazing over. So they could be killed, then. You just had to make sure they never touched you, never came close. For even a glancing blow from one of those overpowered spells could be deadly. Understood, I thought, and surged to my feet. Crown Royal was yelling at me, "Get back here!" I wasn't getting back there. I wasn't sure where I was going, but there was something very, very important I had to... Oh, yeah. I spied Louis César under a couple tons of fallen concrete, and tasteful sandstone and parquet flooring, and another goddamned chandelier, and scrambled toward him over mounds of rubble. It wasn't easy. My legs didn't work right, and the debris was studded with fallen draperies, half a piano, a dust-covered settee, and Radu standing by a bar, and making himself a drink despite the fact that most of his hair was burnt off and a chunk of his torso seemed to be missing. I did a double take while he belted back a stiff one, and I almost ran into Marlowe, who still hadn't found any pants, but who had swathed himself in a curtain and was doing his best Caesar impression, which seemed to mostly involve yelling at me. I ignored him and finally reached Louis César, who was bleeding, bleeding everywhere, and my hands were shaking, and someone was crying, but it wasn't me, because I was yelling now, too. Help him! Help him! Someone was pulling on me, which wasn't going to work, only it did because I was weak as water.
"Will someone put her the hell out?"
Marlowe demanded. Nobody did.
I said... does anybody have the power left to put her?
Someone touched my arm, someone other than Crown Royal, who was still tugging from behind. I looked up to see Horatiu's kindly old face. Unlike everybody else, he looked pretty much like always, in a dapper if dust-covered tuxedo, and peering at me myopically from under a fall of thick white hair. "I've been looking for you," I told him.
"Sleep, child,"
he said, and put a heavily veined hand on my forehead. "No, I can't sleep. I have to." I felt the unmistakable scrape of steel on bone, the frisson up the spine it always caused echoing through me. But the bone wasn't mine. A mage in front of me hadn't been shielded, and the arrogance proved fatal when I slipped a knife between his ribs. A second and third went down, their hamstrings cut, and then their throats as they fell. Another died when an upstroke, coming off the last two, gutted him like unzipping a coat, and a fifth, the last easy one, died trying to warn the others that they had another problem, and kept on trying, his mouth still moving, even as his head bounced across the floor. It had taken perhaps a few seconds, one stroke flowing into another, a familiar deadly dance, the blood painting streamers in the air around me. But it was enough for the other mages to stop attacking and shield. My knife slid off one, stuttered against another, failed to puncture a third, even so much as dent it, despite the fact that all my strength was behind it. That wasn't normal. But then neither were these shields.
"Like I give a damn what you want!"
Crown Royal was yelling at somebody. I didn't know why. And then I noticed that she was facing off with Marlowe, and I understood. He just kind of brought that out in people. I looked around. We were in Mirtra's apartment, sort of. I mean, there were still some walls left, and a window, somehow pristine despite standing almost on its own. And the ceiling. Okay, forget the ceiling, I thought, staring up into what had been a very nice ballroom and was now a skylight.
"I was planning to renovate anyway," Radu said.
It concerned me that I could see through his stomach. "How do you keep the alcohol in?" I asked, and he patted me on the head. I think I lost some time, because there were suddenly red and blue lights flashing in my face, lighting up the rubble. Even for me, getting the cops called twice in one night was, okay, not a record, but not exactly every day, either. I wondered what I'd been up to. Then I saw Luis Cesar, lying on a stretcher between two of Marlowe's men, and the next thing I knew, I was stumbling over there, and nobody tried to stop me this time, probably because Marlowe was getting into a dust-up with the cops. There was some yelling and the usual gas leak explanation, which it didn't sound like anybody was buying, and then somebody spied Radu and started to freak out.
"Oh, for goodness sake!"
That was Crown Royal, who I guess spelled the cops because nobody got shot. I didn't know. I was too busy pawing at Luis Cesar to turn around and find out, and then hitting him, because he wasn't responding, he wasn't doing anything. Until strong hands grasped my wrists, and a blue eye cracked open. The other one was closed, caked with blood and swollen about 3 times its usual size. It matched the jaw, which was heading for Popeye territory, and the neck, which looked like somebody had tried to burn his head off, and the chest, which had great gashes in it. I started to cry, great blubbery, snot-filled sobs, and Luis Cesar began to laugh.
"You do love me. You do love me. Shut up," I told him hysterically,
and would have hit him again, but couldn't find anywhere that wasn't already hurt, which made me cry harder, and oh my God, this was embarrassing. I was almost relieved when Horatiu tottered over and put me out again.
"All the strength and finesse in the world does you no good if you can't reach your target. And I couldn't. Neither could the powerful one who had reappeared, eyes wild and chest panting, despite the fact that he didn't need to breathe. I understood. It was that kind of fight. There were only 3 of us left. The dark-haired master, the powerful one, and me. The rest were dead or fled or were trying to, the injured grabbing the bodies of the unconscious and jumping through missing windows. The 3 of us were attempting to distract the mages while the rest got away by sending massive pieces of debris crashing into those perfect shields. But there were too many of them and too few of us. This wasn't going to work. But I knew something that would. Get out. I sent mentally to the other 2 and saw their heads jerk around in shock. My twin couldn't do that, or give them a mental push forceful enough to stagger the dark-haired one when they just stood there. And I doubted I could do it again under the circumstances. Fortunately, the dark-haired master recovered quickly, grabbed a fallen vampire, and jumped for the nearest window. I picked up the silver ball the strange-haired girl had dropped when she fell. It was warm and thrumming with power it shouldn't have had, like the mages themselves, full of stolen magic. Not for long. The powerful one was a bloody mess, and fighting alone now. But the room was clear, the last of our people slipping away while he ducked and dodged and drew heavy fire, and I yelled, "Go! Now!" I couldn't tell if he obeyed or even heard. Spellfire obscured my vision, the mages turned on me, and I was out of time. But so were they. We'd been fighting on the fringes, trying to protect the weaker ones while they scrambled to get away.
and thus the mages had ended up largely in the middle of the room, around the plastic containers they were trying to retrieve. Most of those had been taken already, but one was still in place. And if it contained what I suspected, one was enough. I threw the silver ball on the fly, while running for the nearest window. I didn't hear the explosion, didn't hear anything, couldn't see. Light was suddenly everywhere, like being in the heart of the sun. All I knew was the feel of a mage's body slamming into mine and the floor falling out from under me and falling.
Ah!
I sat bolt upright, screaming. That felt familiar. And other things that weren't so good, I thought, as the room slurred violently around me. Only it wasn't a room. It was a van, or maybe an ambulance. It wasn't the usual boxy shape, but it was kitted out with a lot of medical gear, much of which seemed to be attached to me. I stared at it, but didn't take it loose. Not because I was being a good patient, but because my brain had finally caught up and was making connections to things. Things that had seemed random, but were suddenly coming together into a picture. One I really didn't like. And then somebody grabbed me and I lost my train of thought. It was Marlowe, who was still there and still yelling, maybe because the van had swerved when I screamed and clipped a line of cars. It righted itself, briefly going up on two wheels in the process, and then we were off again, and Marlowe was in my face, furious brown eyes glaring into mine.
"How did you know that would happen?" he demanded, shaking me. "How did you know?"
"Let her go."
Somebody was tugging ineffectually on his arm.
"Damn it, if you pull out the IV, I'll let her go when she answers the question." "You'll let her go now."
That was Louis César. He was propped in a corner among half a dozen other vamps, none of whom appeared to be conscious. Kit sneered at him.
"You're in no position to give orders, or condition either, after all that. But by tomorrow, I'll be back to normal."
Louis César didn't reference the butt-kicking. I guess he thought it was memorable. And apparently Kit agreed, releasing me with one of those cat noises he likes to make. I fell back against a very inadequate pillow, which I wasn't complaining about right now, and noticed that I did have a needle in my arm. I guess I'd lost a little too much blood. Might account for why it took energy to breathe. It didn't explain what had happened to the rest of them, though. "What happened to them?" I panted, looking at the piled-up vamps.
"Spell," Radu said from somewhere behind me. "They're all right. They're just stunned." "It wasn't a spell."
That was Kit again.
"There's no spell that can do that, not to us."
"That's all very well for you to say. It didn't hit you." They continued arguing while I concentrated on breathing. It wasn't going well.
"Oh, God."
"No, it's Kathy." I stared up into the pleasant face bending over me and thought it looked slightly... "Oh, Crown Royal."
"No, Kathy."
"Well, I could use a drink, Kathy."
She patted my arm.
"Couldn't we all?" "Well, obviously, they were adjusted."
Radu was still talking, and now he sounded pissed.
"Adjusted?"
That was Kit.
"You're talking about goddamned toys. They're supposed to be harmless."
"Mostly harmless."
"What?"
"As Douglas Adams would say."
"What?" "Read a book sometime, you Philistine."
"Radu,"
Louis César said. His head was leaned back against the van's side now, and his eyes were closed. He looked wiped.
"Very well. My point is, these toys, as you call them, aren't toys at all. They're low-grade weapons made for personal defense."
"PPDs," Kathy said.
"What?"
"That's what they're called in the trade. Personal protection devices."
"Thank you."
Radu looked like he was making a note of it.
"In any case, the only difference between these PPDs and whatever we encounter tonight is the amount of magic they hold. The spells are the same."
"Bollocks,"
Marlowe snapped. "Those damned things killed some of us."
Radu paused. I could almost hear him reminding himself that some of the dead had belonged to Kit. He's right. That was Kathy. My uncle has said for years that there ought to be more regulations on PPDs. There are plenty of guys flagged by the Circle, so they can't buy real weapons, who get some of the low-grade stuff, add a bunch of extra magic, and go to town.
And who the hell are you? Kit demanded.
I already told you. I'm one of the night docs for the Brooklyn On-Call Service.
I know that. It doesn't mean you know anything about weapons.
I don't, she agreed placidly. My uncle does. Why do you think I was at your party?
Marlowe didn't look like he cared. You should have left with the rest.
I have a patient to look after, and you're not the boss of me.
Kit blinked at her, his expression somewhere between angry and surprised, like a lion being lectured by a mouse.
Anyway, my uncle is Aaron Samuelson, she continued.
Nothing.
Of Samuelson and Todd?
I'd never seen Marlowe go from asshole to angel that fast.
Ms. Samuelson!
An attempt was made at a smile.
My apologies. It's been a difficult night for all of us.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's been kind of stimulating.
She smiled back.
You have a nice butt.
And for the second time in one night, I saw Marlowe at a loss for words.
This is what I think happened, Radu said. Our opponents needed a large number of weapons, but were having difficulty acquiring enough from their own sources. The Black Circle is formidable, but weapons manufacturing is a specialized field. Just because you're a mage doesn't mean you'll be any good at it.
People train for years, Kathy agreed. There's an apprenticeship and everything.
Exactly. It isn't merely casting a spell. The ones designed for weapons have to last, have to be bound to something portable, and have to be stable enough not to blow up in your face. The Black Circle likely has spellbinders working for them, but not enough for a major war. They needed outside sources.
Kathy nodded.
Somebody must have figured out that the PPDs use the same spells as the more powerful stuff, so you don't need a spellbinder. You just need the magic to plump them up.
It all makes sense, Radu agreed.
It makes no kind of sense.
That, of course, was Marlowe.
Those weapons weren't merely plumped up. They were like nothing I've ever seen. Each spell felt like it had the combined force of 100 mages behind it. And there were cases of them. No one has that much magic, not the Black Circle, and certainly not a bunch of slavers. So how the devil are they doing it?
Nobody said anything. But I suddenly remembered what I had realized earlier, in that brief moment of clarity. Dorina had shown me that vampire remains could be hugely powerful, but it was almost impossible to get them anymore. But there was another magical creature that was dying in quantity and that nobody seemed to care about.
They're using fey bones, I told them, and passed out.
Chapter 44.
Something was wrong. I awoke in a strange bed with a strange vampire. I had a hand on his throat before I recognized him, the powerful master from the fight, the one my twin liked. He was in a healing trance, his many wounds bandaged but still radiating heat, yet he was not insensate. His kind retain a low level of awareness in that state, so he knew I was there. Yet he never so much as stirred, even with my nails digging into his flesh. I slowly removed them. He wasn't the source of the danger. But something was. I glanced around. There was no one else here, but there had been. The room was full of scent puddles, some distant in time, days old. Servants, likely, in to clean and then out again, quickly enough that their presence barely registered. Others were brighter. Like my sire's, his scent unmistakable. Dark, rich, and deep. Part of it clung to my hairline, where he had pushed some damp strands away.
It was an hour old, perhaps two.
I sat up. The brightest scent in the room was around a chair beside the bed. A woman. A healer,
judging by the faint traces of herbs and tinctures, had sat there for some time and possibly fallen asleep watching over her charges. She'd definitely been the one to bandage the vampire. None of his kind would have bothered. He couldn't get infections, and he'd heal himself soon enough, something I supposed she hadn't known. She'd bandaged me as well. Too well. "Mummy," I thought, glimpsing myself in a mirror. The comment came from my still-asleep twin. She thought we looked amusing, like a bikini-wearing mummy, the undergarments almost obscured by bandages and tape. I didn't care what we looked like. I cared about the niggle at the back of my mind, something familiar, but that I couldn't quite place. Something wrong. There was a door across from the bed. I walked over and opened it. No one was outside, not a single guard, which seemed unwise. Did no one here know what I was, what I could do? But all I saw was an empty hall, and all I smelled was wood smoke and alcohol. I followed the scents down the corridor to where it led out into a sitting area. It was mahogany-paneled and dimly lit, mostly by the flickering light of a low-burning fire. A small group had gathered around it, including two humans. I automatically synced my heartbeat with that of one of them, but may as well not have bothered. They were too caught up in their conversation to pay me any attention. And too secure. Because this place... what was this place? The terrible fog in my head caused by the stun spell had cleared, allowing me to access my abilities again. But what they were telling me seemed impossible. I tried to contact my twin's mind, but she was too deeply asleep and batted away the request. It didn't matter. I was already reaching out in something like awe, my mind encountering what felt like every vampire on Earth. I brushed mind after mind, all crowded into one place like a working anthill, and at the center of it all, the Queen. I could see her in my mind's eye, not here, but somewhere close, seated on a dais in the midst of a crowd of her creatures. Silks fluttered, satins gleamed, vampires talked and laughed and moved around her, but I barely saw, didn't care. How can you see the stars when the sun is out?
No bloody idea.
That was one of the people around the fire. There were five in all. Radu, a woman in a glittery blouse, the dark-haired master from the fight, another master vampire I didn't know, and the human man who'd spoken. They seemed to be arguing.
Then take a guess.
The dark-haired master appeared agitated. He was the only one standing, with an arm on the mantle when he wasn't striding around the room. He was strong enough to sense my presence, even with precautions, but too distracted to care.
I can't, the man spat. It's absurd.
He was a mage. I could smell the magic on him. His voice boomed around the room as he sat forward, arguing animatedly with a creature who could silence him between one heartbeat and the next. But he wouldn't. The vampire wanted something.
Don't lie to me. He was bending over the man now. I know what you do in those labs of yours. You experiment on everything. You're telling me you've never... That is what I'm telling you. And get out of my face, vampire.
Uncle. That was the glittery woman. She was the healer I detected in the bedroom. I could just discern her scent over the smell of the fire and the cologne her relative wore. He was still in dirty clothes, fine evening wear smeared with dust. He had been at the fight too then.
Don't uncle me, he told her. I came here for you, even after everything, and now I'm being bullied.
No one can bully you.
Well, he's damned well trying.
I was following their conversation, but it was almost background noise. I was more interested in the Queen, or, more accurately, in her power. It was astonishing. And strange. The strangest I'd ever encountered.
Most masters have a constant level of power. They can call up more in an emergency from their own reserves or those of their children. But normally they display an average that allows you to guess at their abilities. Not this one. I watch the aura around her shrink and expand, but not like breathing. It was wild, uneven, capricious. Instead of being smooth, it spiked and dipped, ebbed and flowed in a pulsing, jittering rhythm. At its height, I could not have touched her. I doubted anyone could. But at its depth, I could have her. Our eyes met, and a small smile flirted with her lips. It would be unwise, she informed me, lighting a cigarette. And suddenly I was back in my head, panting and confused from what felt like a mental slap. Wanted to, how would we obtain any? The mage was asking. We've experimented with Fae Flora now and again, even used some of it on the regular. They have a root that's a damned good stabilizing agent, better than anything we had before. But their bones? Are you mad? You're saying you can't get them. The dark-haired master sounded skeptical. I'm saying I haven't tried. I'm not a murderer or an idiot. The Light Fae. I didn't say anything about the Light Fae. I don't expect you to go hunting the high-born, but some of the dark? The type nobody would miss? You're telling me. I'm through telling you anything. The man was on his feet now and furious. I felt his heart rate spike, saw the flex of his fingers at his waistline. They must have taken his weapons before letting him in here. Probably just as well. Uncle, please. That was the glittery woman who had put down her drink to jump up and grab his arm. Perhaps I should summon Lord Mircha? The other vampire asked. I don't need Mircha, the dark-haired master snapped. I need answers, and I will have them. What you'll have is nothing if you don't shut up. That was the woman, putting herself between her family member and the dark-haired master. She looked at her uncle. Forget about him. Will you answer a few questions for me? He scowled, but after a moment he relented. Make it fast. Your aunt was still in hysterics when I left after that damned farce tonight. You're lucky we got shields up in time, vampire. I would hope you could manage that much, the dark-haired master sneered. When we were saving your lives upstairs from some of your own kind. That's it. The man's fury had coalesced into grim resolve. I won't stay here and be compared to a bunch of damned black magic users. You think that's what they were? The woman asked. What the hell else would they be? Normal mages don't go around experimenting with ground-up bits of fae. Just ground-up bits of vampire, the dark-haired master said, showing some fang. Damn it, man. That was hundreds of years ago. Officially, maybe. That was the other master commenting in a smooth, unruffled tone. He sounded like a bureaucrat, and had some sort of device he kept checking. The traffic continues in small amounts. Maybe among the Black Circle. That's always the excuse. The dark-haired master flushed. Every time we catch you lot in anything. Oh, it wasn't us. It was the bad type of mages. Because it usually is. Not tonight. The Black Circle attacked us several times recently, here and at a stronghold in Las Vegas. They suffered enormous casualties, yet didn't use these powerful new weapons, not even once, which makes me suspicious. Are you accusing me, vampire? I'm asking for an explanation. Your own life was in peril tonight, and your family's. I'd think something that would not have been the case if you'd taken precautions. We did. Those spells tore through them like they were tissue paper. Who the hell is making them? And how and why and where? I want to know, and I will.
I stopped listening. The master was wasting his time. The man didn't know anything more than he'd said. I could see the bewilderment in his mind, along with fear and anger. The vampire would get no answers tonight. But perhaps I would. I followed the annoying niggle back down the corridor to where a dining room lay behind a door. There was a fireplace in here, too, but not for heat. I pushed my head through the illusion and found what I'd expected. A secret passageway, a spy tunnel, and a way for she who saw everything here to move her servants about quickly. No one surprised her in her own home, not even me. I would be spotted in moments by one of the masters I could feel roaming the pathways that snaked through this great house. I would never make it to her, not through all this. Well, not without some help. I woke up in a strange bed with a familiar vampire, and in alarm, but not because Luis Cesar was looking like a corpse, but because... what the hell? Dorina, I thought blankly, and fell out of bed, and then proceeded to go snuffling about like my counterpart was currently doing, because she wasn't in my body anymore. She was... ew!
Dory?
Luis Cesar peered at me blearily from over the side of the bed. It was the consul's, or at least one owned by her, because we were in her house in upstate New York. The ants-on-skin feel of the place, the result of my Damphir senses being assaulted by the presence of hundreds, if not thousands, of vampires all at once, was unmistakable. It literally made me want to scratch my skin off. And Dorina? What the hell would she make of a place like this? Shit. Why did I think I knew?
Dory?
Luis Cesar said again, looking at me strangely. I sat up, trying to ignore the taste of whatever my counterpart's avatar had just found in a dark corner. It wasn't going so well. And now it was on the trail of something else, scurrying about in the dust because house cleaning was not a priority in secret passageways.
Dory?
I'm fine. I looked around. Have you seen some clothes?
What clothes?
Any clothes.
Luis Cesar caught my arm. What is wrong?
For a moment, I didn't answer because I wasn't sure. I wasn't supposed to be able to do this, to feel Dorina when she was away, to know what she was doing. Except for that moment at the end of the car chase with Cademan, when I'd had that terrible split-screen view of the world. I didn't have it now, but I had something.
Dory, talk to me.
This might sound a little weird, I warned him.
Trust me, it already does.
Luis Cesar was looking at my nose. I grabbed it. It was snuffling again. God damn it! I think there's a chance Dorina plans to kill the consul, I told him quickly.
What?
I told you it was going to sound weird. I broke away. Luis Cesar's pants were on the back of a chair. I pulled them on, and then pulled them off again because I'd do a Marlowe in the damned things and break a leg. Damn it, I didn't have time for this. I settled for a sheet, wrapped it sarong style, and headed for the door.
Wait.
Luis Cesar was suddenly beside me, which wasn't a problem, and leaning on the door, which was.
Explain this to me.
I already did.
Explain it to me again.
I don't have time.
Then I'm coming with you.
I looked at him. He should have been in bed. He had healing scars all over his body and even a few seeping wounds. I could smell the blood, thick and strong, under all the bandages. It should have been reabsorbed by now, like the wounds should have closed. Hell, they should have closed instantly. But there'd been a minute or so when he'd been fighting a whole coterie of mages all on his own, ones armed with weapons that killed most vamps on contact. How many times had he gotten hit? How many times were you hit? I demanded.
It doesn't matter.
It matters.
Why?
Blue eyes suddenly burned into mine.
I thought you no longer cared for me.
I glared back at him. This? This is the moment you take for that conversation?
Why not? According to Claire, there are things I do not understand.
The only thing you need to understand right now is there's the bed. I pointed. Get in it.
No.
I glared at him some more. It didn't seem to help.
I'm coming with you, said the most stubborn creature on earth. Make that the second most stubborn.
No way in hell.
And why not?
Because I'm not sure you can take her.
I opened the door, he shut it again, and splayed a hand over it to keep it that way.
That's what this is about? You think she is stronger?
She's a first-level master.
He arched an eyebrow at me.
And she has freaky abilities.
The same could be said of any of us.
Not like this.
I tried to open the door again, but it may as well have been cemented in place.
Like what?
Let go of the damn door!
Answers a question. Like what?
I turned on him.
Like inhabiting a rat scurrying through secret passageways looking to kill the consul.
Luis Cesar blinked at me a few times.
I'm going to call somebody.
Call Marlowe. He's just down the hall. Or he was. He can get her away before Darina finds her.
Get who away?
I stared at him.
Are you listening to me at all? The consul!
Luis Cesar licked his lips. Then he pulled me into an embrace I didn't want. But when a first-level vamp decides he wants to hug you, you just go with it. We stayed there for a moment.
I don't know what he was doing, but I was debating eating some rat bait. The rat was in favor, but Darina was trying to talk him out of it.
They were still arguing when Luis Cesar pulled me over to the bed and sat us down.
One more time, with a bit more explanation?
I sighed. Darina has some kind of weird master power. You know, the one Cademan mistook for a fey ability?
He frowned at Cademan's name, but didn't comment on it. But it is not.
No, it's... Look, I just found out about it, so I don't have a huge amount of info here. But she can separate from my consciousness and tag along with other people. And things.
Things?
He frowned.
You mean like a...
Rat, yes. She didn't think she could make it to the consul in my body, so she borrowed another one.
But you're a senator. You can go wherever you wish. She didn't need.
But I don't think she knows that. We're having communication problems, and I don't think she understands everything.
I sure as hell didn't, I thought, feeling queasy. Probably because my avatar had just eaten a bellyful of poison.
Crap. What?
Never mind. We just have to tell Marlowe.
I started to get up, but Luis Cesar pulled me back down.
Tell him what?
That the consul's in danger.
Yes. I do not think we will be doing that,
Luis Cesar said, grabbing his trousers off the chair. I watched as the world's best butt, bruised and bloody though it was, disappeared into the rumpled leftovers of a once nice suit.
What are you doing?
I told you. Going with you to find Darina.
Why? We'll just tell Marlowe.
Luis Cesar turned on me.
What? That your alter ego is about to kill his lady?
I frowned.
Well, we won't put it like that.
It doesn't matter how you put it. He will very likely attempt to kill you to ensure her survival.
I'm not trying to kill her.
But you and Darina share a body, do you not? He may well decide that killing one would dispose of both.
I opened my mouth to say something, but yeah, that sounded exactly like something Marlowe would do. And bonus, I wouldn't be besmirching his beloved Senate anymore either.
All right, I told him. We won't say anything to Marlowe.
You don't have to,
somebody said, and shot me.
Chapter 45.
I abandoned the dying avatar and flitted out into the air before snaring a human servant who was moving quickly down the hall. He took a wrong turn, but I managed to jump to a low-level vampire who was going the right way, and who was too young to notice one more voice in his head.
among the usual background noise of his family's gossip, of higher-level vampires giving him errands to run, and of others jeering about his clothes. Someone had told him that everyone was going to be wearing livery at the consul's home, and he'd believed it. I managed to plant a suggestion. Suddenly, we were moving much faster than before, through a maze of passageways, and then out a hidden door into a hallway. Or no, I thought, because it deserved a better word than that. It was long and wide, with a great many people in it. It reminded me of some of the old European courts, where a monarch sat at one end of a gallery and cliques of courtiers laughed, talked, and schemed all along it. It was easy to tell the cliques here by their clothing. I rode the small vampire down an expanse filled with priceless statuary, beautiful inlaid floors, and marble walls with the height and breadth of old Rome, and barely noticed. I was too busy gazing at costumes from all over the world and 100 different eras. Older vampires, especially in formal or stressful situations, liked to dress as they had in their youth. It was comfortable, familiar, and an easy way to remind everyone of exactly how old and powerful they were. So we passed by groups looking as if they had just stepped out of ancient China, or the Roman Empire, or Montezuma's court, or some Japanese shogunate, along with dozens of others. And those who weren't in period dress wore the latest magical fashions, everyone trying to outdo everyone else, to the point that my ride's elaborate blue and gold livery seemed tame by comparison. I marveled at a jeweled octopus, its golden arms holding a woman's upswept chignon in place, when it wasn't moving them around to adjust its grip. Nearby, embroidered bees decorated the thick black velvet of a Tudor-era doublet, their fat bodies making constantly changing designs as they buzzed about the sumptuous fabric. And just past them, a flock of magical butterflies fluttered in the air, and then straight through me, their insubstantial forms hovering around the pastoral train of a woman's gown, which showed a garden in full bloom. One of the small creatures had become confused and was trying to feed off the jade and coral adornment in another woman's coiffure. She was in a kimono printed with gambling dragons, which spewed tiny plumes of flame at us as we passed, causing my ride to veer to the side, and to shoot her a dirty look before he got his face under control. There were other such clashes going on everywhere, partly because of the crush which forced the crowd too close together, and partly because, while vampires might not make magic in the traditional sense, they certainly seemed to enjoy it, and to enjoy employing it against others. As demonstrated when my ride abruptly halted and then just froze, staring upward in horror. Several nearby humans glanced around, looking confused, for they saw nothing. But they could feel the sudden escalation of tension in the huge space, the quieting of murmured conversations, and the power washing over their bodies like a hot wind. They quickly moved out of the way, and my ride followed, going from paralysis to a run worthy of an Olympic sprinter, to the amusement of the guests around us. I don't think the young vampire cared. He hugged the nearest wall, swallowing convulsively, and staring upward, like everyone else in the gallery, at the spectacle playing out in the air above us. It was something I'd rarely seen, and never this close. What looked like two huge storm clouds, laced with lightning and shuddering with power, circled each other, writhing and boiling and looking for an advantage, and then transforming into something else. What looked like a giant ghostly tiger emerged from the golden haze, its eyes bright as flame, while a huge flock of crows, black as the night, darted out of the dark gray cloud and tore around the room. It looked like magic, but it wasn't, at least not the human kind, but rather two first-level masters, their power taking on forms that had meaning for them, preparing to savage each other. It wasn't a duel, not quite, but it was often the precursor to one, the show of power they sometimes put on before the killing started, because if it went on long enough, it could drain a master into vulnerability. It didn't drain anyone this time. because a new cloud formed up out of nothing all at once. It was green and black and terrifying, and carried so much power that it caused my ride to sink down onto his haunches, whimpering softly. And that was before it took the form of an enormous snake, hissing and rearing back like a cobra ready to strike. The other two clouds abruptly parted, the tiger snarling and turning away with what I swear looked like its tail between its legs. But the other remained in place a little too long, and was whipped viciously by the snake's great tail, sending the birds crashing against the opposite wall, where they puffed away into bursts of black smoke. Conversation, which had gone silent for the duration, resumed. The light music playing in the background likewise picked up where it had left off. A casual observer, walking in a minute late, might have been forgiven for thinking that nothing had happened. But something had, and was likely to again, because friction was everywhere now that I looked for it. The gallery was packed with masters, who until very recently had thought they knew where they stood in the overall hierarchy, who had believed they had a grip on the motives, desires, and histories of everyone around them, who had spent centuries working their way into their present positions at their own courts and building up a rock-solid foundation, only to find the bedrock under their feet suddenly turned to quicksand when they were confronted by hundreds of new power players as the Court of Courts coalesced. Normally, physical contests would have sorted things out, with masters competing against one another for positions of power. But my twin's mind informed me that duels were forbidden for the course of the war, lest they cost the court too many of its most useful members. So tensions were high and getting higher with no outlet in sight. And that was especially true around the mini-courts of the other consuls. They were seated here and there along the gallery, in areas that looked like they might once have held large statues. But the raised platforms had been cleared off, draped in swags of rich fabric, and decked in various types of seating arrangements, turning them into smaller versions of the Queen's dais up ahead. There the other consuls, the Queen's counterparts at senates around the world, sat surrounded by their combative creatures. They could have easily reined them in, but weren't doing so. The Queen might have proven the strongest momentarily, and won their grudging allegiance. But winning wasn't keeping, and there were jealous eyes everywhere, on her position as much as the rest. The whole court was a powder keg, the air thick with expectations, which might explain why nobody had yet realized what moved among them, and because they were careless. They didn't expect to find me in this place of many masters. They thought themselves safe, at least against my kind of peril. And they were right, for now. I looked toward the main dais, where the Queen sat, smiling at something one of her courtiers had said. I was after bigger prey.
Jolt, jolt, jolt! Duck, bend, ah! Jolt, jolt, jolt!
I woke up to the sensation of being carried, painfully, somewhere I couldn't see, because I couldn't see anything. The only light came from little squares of haze that broke the blackness here and there, but they flashed by so quickly that they didn't help much. In fact, it was mostly the opposite. They acted like strobes in a nightclub, brightening things just enough to fool my eyes and make me dizzy. And I was already dizzy enough. Damn it, what was happening? I struggled the rest of the way back to consciousness, cursing the darkness. But then a bullet whizzed by and sparked off the floor in front of us, and I decided I didn't mind so much. And then it didn't matter because whoever was carrying me made a movement so fast that even as part of it I couldn't follow. And suddenly we were running through light. Not bright light. Most of it was provided by huge candelabras dripping wax everywhere and looking creepy. But they showed me enough to realize that Luis Cesar was carrying me, that we'd just darted out of one of the hidden passages around here, and that we were currently tearing through a library, and that somebody was shooting at us. Make that a lot of somebody's. And I was caught up. "Put me down," I told him, struggling.
"In a moment."
"Why? What are you waiting for?"
"That.
he said as we burst into a narrow hallway and leaped over a line of masters who just knelt in front of us. I thought I recognized one of them.
Mirchus?
Mirchus.
I craned my neck around because we were now running down the hall, so fast that it was almost a blur. But I was in time to see another squad of vamps, the ones who